Bryce Hoffman. He's a reporter for the Detroit News. He covers the auto beat, and he's written a pretty cool book. It's called American Icon, Alan Manalli and the Fight to Save the Ford Motor Company. Good morning, Bryce. How are you?
Good morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Tell me about the writing for the auto beat in this market. What's the best thing? What's the worst thing about it?
Well, you know, it's always fascinating, and it's been particularly fascinating over the past few years as we've seen all three of the Detroit automakers, you know, fighting for their lives and then coming back. It's just been a really exciting ride.
American Icon. Where'd you get the idea to write this book?
Well, I've been covering Ford since 2005, and, you know, I knew as soon as I started looking at the company that I was witnessing something really incredible here. It was either the death of one of the most iconic companies in American history, or it was going to be the story of how they saved themselves, and I was going to write it either way, but, they did save themselves, and in doing so, I think they really created a uniquely American story because they did it without taking a taxpayer bailout, and they fixed their own problems, pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, and it's really an exciting story, and it's one that has a lot of lessons for other businesses and other organizations as well.
It was interesting when we were suffering through that auto crisis, and Chrysler and GM took the brunt of that. To see Ford not need as much help and really just thrive in a quicker manner than the other two did was very interesting to watch.
Yeah, well, you know, Ford had a couple things going for it. They had taken out what Alan Mulally likes to call the biggest home improvement loan in history, $23 billion at the end of 2006, just before the credit market slammed shut. And, you know, as I talk about in the book, Rick Wagoner actually came up to Bill Ford a few weeks later and said, you know, hey, why did you do that? You know, you look desperate now. And Bill said, well, we'll see who's desperate, you know, here. And GM tried to do the same thing a few months later, and they weren't able to because it was too late. But even with that, you know, Ford had to really cut deep, cut to the bone in order to make it, in order just to keep the lights on without taking a taxpayer bailout. They got to the point where they stopped watering the plants in their offices, stopped washing the windows, you know, things like that. That's how close they came.
It was interesting to watch what was going on there with the big three, Bryce, because they all seem to follow the same model. They weren't building the cars that we wanted to buy. They weren't as good quality as many other foreign manufacturers. What happened?
Well, you know, they lost their way, and you know, they got complacent. And when the Japanese came in and started building better cars and you know, building the cars, as you point out, that people wanted to buy, they were too slow to react. But, you know, that was why I think it took it forward. The thing they really had going was bringing in this guy, Alan Mulally, you know, from Boeing. He was an aerospace guy. He didn't know anything about building cars, but he did know about global manufacturing. He'd already saved Boeing after the terrorist attacks of September 11th had almost, you know, sent Boeing into bankruptcy because most of the airlines, as people might remember, just canceled their orders for new planes. And he was able to come in as an outsider, Tony, and look and see what was wrong clearly, you know, see that they weren't building the cars and trucks people wanted to buy, see what the problems were, and come up with a really simple plan to turn it around. And a big part of it was, I mean, it's literally an element of his plan, and it sounds like a no-brainer, is we need to start building cars and trucks that people want.
Very interesting part of the book is how dissent nearly tore apart the Ford family. Tell us about this.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Ford is a unique company. It's a publicly traded company, but it's still controlled by the Ford family. And the value of their shares had diminished dramatically over the, you know, the previous decade. They weren't getting dividend payments anymore. And for a lot of these people, this was a major source of their income, so it was just gone. And, you know, as things got really desperate, some of them, you know, started to wonder, you know, should we cash in our chips and leave like almost every other industrial family had done in the past? But, you know, Bill Ford and Elena Ford people who in the family who work at the company really kind of convinced their relatives to give Mullally the time to let his plan work, and it did. And I'm not sure that they would have been able to stay out of bankruptcy if it wasn't for the family, because the family was able to kind of, you know, give him that time.
Where is Ford now? What's the future look like?
You know, I think that it's still a tough market for all automakers. I think that, you pointed out, Ford came out of this much quicker than General Motors or Chrysler, and they did it because the American people really rewarded them for fixing their problems themselves. And they came out very strong, and that was an unsustainable growth. You know, now they have a more normal growth pattern. But they face challenges in Europe like the rest of the auto industry. But that's the point. They face the same sort of normal business challenges that other corporations face. They're not fighting for their life anymore.
Tell us about Bill Ford Jr.
Bill Ford Jr. is the great-grandson of Henry Ford. And, you know, in 2006, before Mullally was hired, he had gotten to the point where he was wearing three different hats, which was kind of, you know, amazing. He was the chairman, the CEO, and the president, and it was just too much. He's a very nice guy, and people were lying to his face in the company, and he was struggling to kind of cut through this caustic corporate culture that had held Ford back for so long. He couldn't get a straight answer from his own executives about why things weren't working. And, you know, the board and he had some very frank discussions about, you know, even though his name was on the side of the building, maybe the time had come to step aside and bring in someone else. And to his credit, you know, as you know, Tony, there's big egos in this industry. And it was an amazing thing to see someone like that be able to say, hey, you know, I'm going to step aside and bring in someone who can do this. He said to the board, and it's an amazing thing, a direct quote, he said, I have a lot invested in this company, but the one thing I don't have invested in it is my ego.
What does Ford mean to the state of Michigan?
Well, I think it means it's so such an important part of our history and our culture, but it's also, you know, central to our economy. And, Ford is the company that even though General Motors is the largest automaker, Ford is still the company that put the world on wheels.
And I wanted to get your take on Ford and its relationship with the Detroit Lions as someone who has been covering Ford and in Detroit for some years. Talk about that relationship.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, for Bill Ford personally, you know, as you know, Bill and his dad own the Lions, and it was really kind of a perfect storm for him, because as he was dealing with watching his company slide towards bankruptcy, the team was not doing any better.
Well, the team was in peril for many, many years. Now they're on a cusp of being a great playoff team. And I would think that should they have some success and get to the Super Bowl, he might get greater accolades for that than with the resurgence of Ford.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps in some circles, but, you know, I mean, there a lot of jobs have been saved by the resurgence of Ford. So, I see what you're saying, but there's a lot at stake in the company.
All right, Bryce, before we let you go, what was the most interesting or surprising thing you learned while writing this book?
I'll tell you the most interesting thing to me, Tony, because nobody had any idea this was happening. In the depths of the crisis, Ford was watching, you know, as a lot of your listeners know, a lot of the suppliers that are key to all of the automakers were really struggling. Many of them went bankrupt. And Ford reached out to the other automakers and said, hey, let's work together to save the critical suppliers, to make sure they stay in business so that we can all keep making our vehicles. General Motors thought, no, that smacks of antitrust to us. They weren't going to participate. Chrysler was too big of a mess to do anything. But Toyota and Honda, Ford's arch enemies, joined forces with Ford, and they secretly worked together to prop up the key suppliers in the U.S. that they all depended on and prevent a much worse catastrophe.
What'd they do?
They would do a lot of horse trading. They would say, you know, look, okay, this supplier, you know, is critical to us, but they're in trouble. Can you give them a little bit of work? And if you do, we'll give a little bit of work to this supplier that's critical to you that's in trouble. Things like that.
From your perspective, how has the book been received? You've been traveling the country.
Yeah, it's I'm here in New York right now and been doing all the big shows and stuff. You know, it's just such a great American story. People really, really, I think in this era where we've watched the Wall Street banks, you know, take so much money and lose so many so much money for people. As we've watched other companies, you know, take these government bailouts and stuff, people, I think, are really heartened to hear the story of that at least one U.S. company was able to do it and do it on their own without taking the taxpayer bailout and, you know, create all this growth. You know, Ford right now is bringing jobs back into the U.S. that were outsourced to Mexico, things like that. And the other thing is I think people see that, particularly in Mullally's leadership style, that there's a lot of lessons that they can learn for their own businesses and their own organizations.
All right, Bryce, for the rest of second quarter, what's going to be the top stories in the auto industry?
It's Europe. It's Europe, Europe, Europe. I mean, for all, excuse me, Tony, for all the automakers, it's Europe. Because the economic crisis in there, in a lot of ways, Europe is going through what the U.S. was going through, you know, in 2008 and 2009, the market for automobiles is collapsing, and you know the companies and the unions over there are going to face some tough decisions about how they react to this down market, and that's a problem for Ford, it's a problem for GM, it's a problem for the Europeans, it's a problem for the Japanese.
Bryce Hoffman is a Autobeat writer for the Detroit News. He's the author of the new book, American Icon. If you like automobiles, if you like Ford, you'll love this story. Bryce, thanks so much and continued success.
Thank you very much, Tony. Have a great morning.